SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening on Sirius XM Online and at our website, stevebick.com. Absolutely. I don't know if this is going to be the end. Here it is, December 1st. And the two very important texts. I get the sense, given how beautiful it is, you figure the worm's going to turn here real soon. It'd be nice if we can make it through the weekend. You've got the cigar mile weekend coming in New York, and right now I don't know. You got a little rain action. I don't know how much more turf we're going to be able to salvage here in New York. And this is always the juncture. And in fact, now that I say that, I am curious if some of the, I think everything else is main track, the stakes anyway, the Demoiselle and the Remsen, of course. You got the Gopher Wand and the Cigar Mile, yeah. So it's only the, the miscellany that a couple of maidens and so forth. The weather certainly affected. I was going through some of the weekend results that I hadn't really closely watched, and Fairgrounds, I mentioned yesterday in passing that they had just gotten slaughtered. They have yet to get a race in on the grass. Every single turf race has come off the turf. Very rough start on that front. There it is. 4, 8, 12, 16. They're 0 for 16 starting the meet. Every single race scheduled for the grass came off the opening few days. So they're due for a better period here. The action in Vinton occurs to me that we had talked about yesterday, and in passing I had mentioned that Jean Lafitte, and today the My Trusty Cat, and Brad Cox, wherever you look, wherever you go, Brad Cox, very tough to turn back. A Judmont homebred by Malibu Moon. Privé Moon, and a winner last out in the slop at Indiana, and comes back under Diego Sanez and wins the Jean Lafitte yesterday, wire to wire. Awesome Jerry, who I kind of mentioned just as one of the one of the names in there that looked okay, the Safi Joseph. Joseph had a pair. And went off as the 6-5 second choice. The other Safi Joseph, Drain the Clock, dropped the rider, and he went off at even money. Drain the Clock, but Privé Moon for Judmont, and of course Judmont on Sunday, the Matriarch for Chad Brown. So couple of notables. And today, come back, and Cox has got a chance to sweep the two-year-old stakes because he's got Color of Dawn, an exaggerator filly, in the My Trusty Cat. 100,000, seven furlongs. This one, 5:07 Eastern, 4:07 Central. There's a horse, by the way, since I'm looking at this. There's a horse in here from Greg Tracy on McLean's Music. She likes to party. And this horse is 3-for-3. The figs on paper, when you glance at it, she doesn't look super competitive with Little Stitious. In fact, the Little Stitious, you saw at Keeneland, break her maiden for Tom Amos and Joe Politi. Or Color of Dawn, or even Taylor's Tourist, who's 8-5 for Scott Gaynor. But she likes to party. It's 15-1, and she's fast. I'm very interested. 15-1. Interesting. So later today, Delta Downs. A couple of other transitional spots that we have to talk about tomorrow, opening day at Turfway. And I reached out. I haven't heard back. I haven't reached. Haven't heard back yet from Chip Bach. But I was hoping that we'd get Chip in today. Suppose we could do it tomorrow too. But I wanted to get out in front. I always get a visit in with Chip and discuss how things are going to unfold. I mean, obviously with the building gone, and I mean the building was going to be gone anyway, and the new facility. Certainly wasn't going to be close to ready. But right now, kind of waiting and hearing to hear on how things are going to unfold. We certainly hope. I mean, there's two elements, of course, of the construction of the new building and the gaming parlor. One is the pandemic elements, and then the historic horse racing equipment question, which has gone kind of quiet right now, but Churchill grappling with that, and we'll see what Chip can tell us. But in the meantime, they certainly, if you haven't looked at opening night, they've got a very nice start. And you heard Marty McGee on Friday talk about the number of horsemen that are leaving horses in Kentucky, or are staying completely, not going to Florida or Louisiana or Arkansas. And you look at the opening card, the purses have been reinforced. And you look at this 8-race card for opening night. They're going to kick off 6:15 first post. But 9 by 12 by 10 by 12 with 4 AEs, by 12 by 11 by 12 with an AE, by 12 with AEs. You like the synthetic surface. You have got plenty, it looks like, to engage at Turfway, getting things going. Haven't had a chance yet either. We for Thanksgiving, with the Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday away, we didn't talk about Tampa. Tampa got off to, seemingly a good start. They pick up again tomorrow. And it looks like they've had, nice-sized fields to get going. And I'm sure we'll talk, you know what, we'll talk to Marcus Hirsch Tuesdays are never a good day for Marcus. So we'll talk to Marcus later in the week, and we got to get Fairgrounds in with him as well with the season underway. I did notice that, and I did actually print the, you know, the everybody, if you like to get out in front of your PPs, certainly the way they draw down there is advantageous. And the Saturday card already posted, the very nice addition of the Panzeretta. Got a nice full field in the Panzeretta, the turf sprint. So I was just, you know, kind of glancing, looking ahead. And, of course, we talked yesterday with Mike Welch and just touched on the beginning of the Gulfstream winter and looking at the first couple of cards. And, you know, the real racing is on the, particularly on Saturdays. You know, otherwise it's, you know, kind of meat and potatoes getting going. And tomorrow they'll draw for the Claiming Crown, which is always kind of interesting. One element today, and by the way, speaking of Mike Welch's visit, it occurs to me to mention that Bobby Newman, as promised, we're going to get Bobby Newman. He's going to visit around the top of the hour, next hour, and he'll provide his Calder retrospective. He had a good run at Calder. So we'll talk to Bobby about his favorite moments, and I'm sure some it's the speed and some of the horses and the people from his tenure at Calder. I was watching, I was looking for a race to maybe play, and I think we're going to play one. I know we're going to play a Summit of Speed race. I was specifically looking for one of the ones when I was there for a Summit of Speed, and Lost in the Fogs, Carry Back. And I was a big Lost in the Fog fan. And got to see him, you know, when Greg Gilchrist came east with him. Got to see him a bunch of times. And in fact, it occurs to me that with Rich Migliori, I should ask about one of the really good battles. If you're a Lost in the Fog fan, you may have remembered the 2005 Belmonte in the Riva Ridge. Lost in the Fog and Egghead, they hooked up in a terrific, terrific duel in the stretch, and eventually Lost in the Fog under Edgar Prado. I don't know where was Russell Bays that day, but Edgar had the chance on Lost in the Fog, and Rich was on Egghead. Egghead got sick, I think, and died, if I'm not mistaken. He colitis X or something. He had something happened to Egghead. I should ask Kieran. That was Kieran. That race, that's one of those races that, you know, it kind of just, you know, whatever reason sticks in your head. Calder, a little bit more Calder today. Jay Privman is going to join us in hour two as well. And we'll talk to Jay. He's actually preparing or is technically off for a couple of weeks ahead of the start of the Santa Anita winter season. So we'll slip Jay in here so he can break away and relax for a couple of weeks before things kick off at Santa Anita on Boxing Day. I mean, it's hard to believe that we're in December, but we'll do some recapping of the Del Mar season and probably also bring up the Kentucky Jockey Club, where, you know, a lot of those, I talked about this the other day. I sent out a tweet when Jay finished his recap he had of the Jockey Club. I made the point that, you know, Jay, you got to read these and make either save them, put them in a binder, do whatever, make notebook notes, because Jay has got a terrific feel for these, the real, you know, the long-term aptitudes of these horses that are trying, you know, to get on the road to the Derby. And, you know, for instance, the horses that were coming out of the juvenile, he had, you know, he had the perfect read on those horses, including Sitting on Go. So we'll get some of the Del Mar recapping in, and then let Jay take off on a little vacation. Andy Serling, of course, too. We'll get Andy in hour three. So plenty to do. Plenty to keep you busy. This first hour, too, Aaron Crady is going to join us here shortly. In fact, we could probably reach for Aaron and Case. And it is, you know, as we mentioned yesterday with Kim Weir, if you were listening to the replay just up leading up to the top of the hour, the, you know, the Giving Tuesday concept, and Aaron Crady at the TCA, Thoroughbred Charities of America. I wanted Aaron to visit and, you know, give you a bit of a further roadmap. I mean, not, you know, there's so many different ways. If you're in a mindset and you know want to give, there's so many different avenues. Obviously, I mean, there's the riders with things like jockeys and jeans, and with, you know, PDJF you know, together, and there's all the different horse aftercare options, like we talked yesterday, whether at retirement centers, retraining centers, everything else. And then there's the human element, you know, the backstretch. And speaking of the human element, when it comes to Aaron, we're going to, can't forget to acknowledge the racetrack chaplaincy, honoring her. Really a wonderful recognition of her work. So we're going to get Aaron Crady in. And Randy Hill this hour as well. And kind of a sad note. You may have seen word that Billy Price had passed. And Price, long time associate Randy. So he'll wanted to get Randy on to pay tribute to his friend and racing manager, Billy Price. You know, by the way, as we wait for Aaron, a couple of pieces of sidebar news that went along with yesterday's visits. Number one, the specifics, literally hours after Jerry McLennan joined us and laid out some of those specifics, I just asked them about, you know, how things were going to go forward with the Pampa horses. And literally a couple of hours later, Keeneland had a press release with all the specifics and, you know, the mares that are in foal, you know, to connect. And, you know, then the racing prospects, including, you know, the two winners from Saturday, as well as Country Grammar, the Peter Pan. You would imagine that these will be you know, very well received at Keeneland January. Just awful. Also, since I mentioned Santa Anita, and I suppose I can bring it up with Jay too. News from Arcadia, Nate Newby, who has been just so available and ubiquitous at Santa Anita in the marketing capacity and on the management team, and he's promoted to general manager, which is very cool. So big congratulations to Nate Newby and Chris Mears. And he was basically doing the racing secretary job, but you know, officially gets the racing secretary name. He had been operating as director of racing, but Chris had gone east and was working at Laurel, and when the opportunity arose to come back to Santa Anita, you know, he worked under Hammer at Santa Anita before that shift out to Laurel, and you know, it seemed at the time when he went back, it seemed like, you know, I certainly understand, you know, when you're from an area and you know, you want to be where your preferred locale. So this is great for two younger racing officials, as they say, and happy for the two of them, two really good people around the game, whether it's out there or wherever they would be. So congratulations to Nate and to Chris Mears. Case, let me send you this in case you don't have it. There we go. There's Aaron. All right. Try that. Let's try the cell. All right. Beautiful. I mentioned in passing yesterday, too, and didn't give the numbers. I had them written down and didn't run through, you know, more than a couple. The full rundown when it came to the future wager and, you know, after the, you know, the horses you knew were going to take money, like Life is Good and Essential Quality, when you went looking for values, there were some. How about Shug 10 for 10, who's going to run in the Remsen? 10 for 10 went off at 51 to 1. That number may look really good come Saturday night, right? And Bill Mott's got that Speaker's Corner, 29 to 1. How about that Pick and Time that I mentioned? Pick and Time for Kelly Breen, 96 to 1. There were some numbers. There were three that I ended up poking around. Also, in addition to Pick and Time, who I couldn't resist, Midnight Bourbon, Steve Asmussen, 59 to 1. And that Hot Rod Charlie, what was wrong with his performance in the Breeders' Cup? Hot Rod Charlie, 34 to 1. So there were some interesting numbers, and I didn't really the sire wager doesn't really I don't know sire wager didn't doesn't catch you know, my interest as much. It's an interesting concept. Into Mischief, 4 to 1. I guess on the strength of his, you know, of the first horse of his that was successful at a classic distance, there may not be, you know, we'll see if there's another authentic out there. Tappet was 6 to 1, all other sires 5 to 1. Not this time, 30 to 1. You know, so you got some of the ones that, you know, you got that kind of a sire that is, you know, going to have the, you know, the 3-year-olds. We'll see how they, you know, how they continue to grow and stretch out. Aaron Crighty joins us from the Thoroughbred Charities. And it's a perfect day for it. It is this Giving Tuesday concept, not Thursday. You can give on Thursday, too. That'd be fine. But I wanted Erin to visit so that those that are inclined to make a donation, it's pretty overwhelming, and there's a lot of options out there. And TCA provides grants in a bunch of different directions. Erin, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. This has been an interesting development, as you know, between the Black Friday and then came Cyber Monday, and then on the heels came this Giving Tuesday concept. Out of curiosity, since its inception, do you see a bump? Do people actively donate today more than any other day?
Sometimes I think, there is a lot of messaging out there on Giving Tuesday, and it's such a great day, because you have Black Friday, Cyber Monday, and then Tuesday is just kind of that day to do good. I believe that's why it was created in 2012, was just simply, let's do some good out there.
Well, and of course, TCA does a lot of good, and I'd love for you to remind everybody, the way in which the charities are, are apportioned, and how TCA spreads the generosity and spreads the goodwill.
Sure. Well, TCA, we are a grant-making organization, so we provide funding to approved charities throughout our country within the thoroughbred industry. And what's kind of unique about TCA is that we help both the human side as well as the horse side. So, on the human side, we provide funding to organizations that are there providing health and human services to backstretch workers, to farm workers. Because as we all know, that they are the backbone of our industry. So it's very important, that we support those organizations. Then on the horse side, of course, we support a large number of aftercare organizations throughout the country that are working not only to potentially retire or in many cases rehab, retrain, and rehome. So those thoroughbreds can go on to excel in second careers, because we all know how versatile they are. And, when they come off the track with a little retraining, they can go on to be successful hunter jumpers or dressage horses or, simply someone's pleasure trail horse. But we have to give them that opportunity, to retire sound and move on through an aftercare organization and go on to their second careers.
Give us some of the options and the ways in which people can impact and make make the donations, and can they specify, or is it a general gift that that goes into your pool that then you apportion out?
Sure. So we have a couple options there on our website, tca.org. You can click, there's a donate online now button there in the middle of the website that you can click on for an online donation. And that has a few options for our donors. You can make a donation to where it's needed most, and that would certainly be what we call our general grants fund, and that's where we, provide grants to those approved organizations throughout the year. And then we also have our Horses First Fund, which is our emergency fund, and that was started back in 2016 in partnership with LNJ Foxwoods. And that's kind of honestly become like a Red Cross of sorts for the thoroughbred industry. We use the fund there in during Hurricane Maria, when that ravaged Camarillo racetrack there in Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. We used the fund during the fires at San Luis Rey. So things like that. And we did provide some emergency grants this year in the face of the pandemic. So there's also an option there on our website to donate to that fund or our endowment. Endowments are very, very important to ensure longevity of organizations. So we do offer some options there. But it's been a good year, for us in the face of this crazy year. We were actually able to grant over $1 million this year to 70 organizations throughout the U.S. and two in Canada. And, you know, it's all thanks to our generous donors. We wouldn't be anywhere without them.
That's one of the reasons I thought to, you know, have you visit. I mean, yesterday, you know, we visited with Kim Weir and you know, mm-hmm. very supportive of what TRF has to do, where, you know, they've got the enormous task of, you know, the aftercare's largest herd. And of course, you know, they've got, you know, the situation where when they have a horse, you know, join the herd, it essentially is for the rest of their lives. I mean, it's a big task. So I always am eager to direct toward TRF. And when it comes to what you can do, I find that TCA, you know, with that broad brush, there's a lot of appeal. And I was mentioning how there's so many areas that we can support. And, you know, everybody has, I'm sure, their, you know, their favorites, whether it's the animals, whether it's the riders, jockeys and jeans and PDJF and all the work they do. You know, the children, we talk about the Backstretch Learning Center at Churchill and Anna House in New York, and, you know, the daycare and education services. And then you talk about, as you did with you know, the Backstretch assistance teams in general. So there's just, you know, a the need to support a very wide safety net.
That's absolutely right. And that's one of the things, you know, that we kind of share at TCA, is that we're, you know, we're one helping many. This year, those 70 grant recipients included 45 aftercare organizations, 16 backstretch and farm worker programs, 5 equine assisted therapy organizations that are utilizing thoroughbreds, off-the-track thoroughbreds, you know, in equine assisted therapy programs. 3 thoroughbred incentive programs, like, you know, the Retired Racehorse Project or the Thoroughbred Incentive Program, and 1 research organization. So, you know, you get to TCA, and it really does go far and wide. We have so many different touch points within the industry. And, you know, we truly are one helping many. It's kind of that United Way type model, in a way. So it's, you know, it's, in my opinion, we, you know, certainly are a great organization to provide your Giving Tuesday donation to. We are a staff of 2, so we're lean and
wow.
Lean. But we, you know, have a very active, engaged board, which we're very grateful for. And as I said, we've, you know, it's been a challenging year. We certainly did see an increase in grant applications this year. So the need, you know, seems to be greater than ever. But we were very excited to be able to, for the first time in many years, be able to grant over $1 million this year. And then we also had a recent launch of an app called Como, and that was in partnership with Godolphin. So you may have heard about Como. It's actually a mobile app that is designed for the backstretch workers as well as farm workers, and it simply connects them to resources they need. So, you know, let's say, you know, I'm a backstretch worker, I'm going to Gulfstream for the winter, and I need dental services. I can jump on this app and, you know, figure out where those services are around me. It also offers some real-time delivery of information, mostly populated by racetrack chaplains and, you know, backstretch organizations. So that's something else we've been up to this year, again, you know, trying to think about both sides of our industry, the horse and the human.
You know, I'm curious, and this just sort of pops in my head as you know, we talk about Thoroughbred Charities of America, Aaron Crady with us, and the backstretch and farm programs, retirement, retraining, and placement. You mentioned the research and also therapy projects. Is there potential, or would the industry benefit, Aaron, from a clearinghouse, so to speak? I mean, the way in which after a period, it seemed, of confusion, not confusion as much as, you know, there was kind of a miasma of you know, off the track charitable groups, and the formation of the Aftercare Alliance, for instance, was a, you know, was, at the time I wasn't sure, you know, what the long-term benefit was potentially going to be, but it ended up being really successful, and it really kind of muted what felt like, you know, a cacophony of of aftercare voices, and it really kind of unified things. From your perspective, is there a, not that what we're doing now isn't, you know, isn't working, but is there a way to ensure that, you know, that everybody that needs it is getting, you know, the help they need?
Sure. You know, we certainly try to help as many as we possibly can with, you know, with being a good steward of the donations that come into us. You know, our grant application process is pretty stringent. You know, we evaluate our applicants on various sort of areas, you know, governance, structure, financials, you know, all of the important things that we need to look at to ensure that we are being a good steward of our donors' money, you know, and then ultimately granting out that money to the organizations that kind of, you know, pass our process. So, you know, I think the process in place, you know, we certainly, like I said, try to help as many as we possibly can, but I think there's always going to be a need out there, you know, so we certainly try to meet it as best we can. You know, the formation of the Horses First Fund several years ago, I think that absolutely, you know, filled a need that was there in the industry. So we're always looking for ways to innovate, ways to meet those needs in the industry. So, you know, absolutely, I think if, you know, we'll continue to do what we can to meet those needs. But, you know, there's always room to do more and do better.
Well, there's so many different ways, too. I'll send out links to the TCA website so that people can see everything they need to know. I mean, if they're unfamiliar, TCA.org, it's an easy address to get to. But the Stallion Season Auction, which is always a big success. There's so you can, you know, donate seasons to, you know, stallions. If there's, you know, certainly we're going to talk to Randy Hill momentarily, and you know, there's certainly owners out there. Not every owner that gets shares from stallions that get established at, you know, at a stud farm. Some of them don't use those. I'm sure you get a ton of donations that way, unused, you know, unused seasons, and they raise. What percentage of your budget does the Stallion Season Auction produce?
It's significant. You know, the season auction is very. It's our largest annual fundraiser for sure.
Right.
But it does fluctuate based on, you know, the stallion market. So as sure. I'm seeing press releases come out about, you know, declining stud fees in 2021, I kind of gasp a little bit. but it is our largest annual fundraiser. So, you know, we certainly try to do everything we can to make it as successful as possible. But yeah, it is upcoming January 6th through 8th will be the online auction there on Starquine. And of course, we've had to pivot a little bit. I feel like pivot is the word of the year, right? We won't be having our live in-person auction,
right.
You know, just, you know, of course, with the pandemic.
Right.
But we are still going to sell select seasons. And that will be on Tuesday, January 12th at the close of book one at Keeneland. So Keeneland is graciously going to be selling those select seasons for us. So we still, you know, we're again pivoting a little bit. No live in person auction, you know, with the cocktail party, and right. Hopefully we'll be able to have that return in the future. But for early 2021, we're going to just kind of sell those select seasons there at Keeneland. I think it'll be great. It could even potentially open up, you know, a larger audience for us, which would be excellent. Well, we also concurrently run a non-season auction, non-season items. So, you know, your halters and your trips and your tickets.
Right.
So that'll also go along with the Stallion season auction there. So, yeah, any you know, donors out there that have unused breeding shares or breeding rights that would like to sell them in the auction, feel free, please reach out. We would love to try to sell those seasons.
Excellent. And that also includes memorabilia. And if you don't know, you know what, if you got a little too much around the house, this would be, you know, a good focus. And I've got to include before we wrap too, it was really immediately you know, appreciative of the news from the racetrack chaplaincy. Also a good giving option, but the RTCA, Aaron, providing you this year as the designee for the Community Service Award, and I thought right away what a great choice. So congratulations on that.
Oh, thank you so much. That's much appreciated. You are actually one of the first people to text me and say congratulations, so that means a lot. Thank you.
Not at all. The White Horse Awards, and there's also the story, the crazy story from Prairie Meadows, the horse that got onto the highway that was saved. I mean, just if you haven't seen the video and seen the whole thing with Vicky Dorian, just unbelievable. She got in her pickup and chased the horse down and you know, jumped the median and.
Like a movie.
It's like one of those. Yeah, it's like one of those things you see on Twitter. You know, it's like you're staring. It's like this didn't really happen, did it? But it
did.
And so you and Victoria, really good designees this year for the White Horse Awards. And you know, normally they'd be at the luncheon at Breeders' Cup, but that was postponed. I mean, they're, you know, this is really. Pandemic's taken, you know, a lot of those special moments, you know, away from everybody. But hopefully, you know, very soon we'll get to reboot. Well, Aaron Crady, I as always, appreciative of the work and eager to help people find a good place to send their money, because it'll be well used in whatever, you know, whatever area it trickles down. It's a big, important message to send out there. So I appreciate it. And I'm sure we'll catch up with you in the new year.
Sounds great. Thank you so much. And happy Giving Tuesday.
Giving Tuesday with the TCA, Thoroughbred Charities of America. And we'll feature Aaron visits at least twice a year. And wanted to make sure, because I thought what was good today was, you know, to show how the money can, you know, can be spread out. Human, equine, research, you know, so many different places. Usually when we visit with Randy Hill, it's to celebrate something good that's happened with one of his horses. And we certainly did that earlier in the year when Vekoma was making his mark and adding to his resume that gets him a chance to stand at stud. But in this case, saddened that we reach for Randy to pay tribute to his longtime friend and associate, Billy Price. And Randy, so sorry to see this news yesterday.
Yeah, well, I appreciate your sentiments, you know, but it's really extraordinary about how many people in the industry have reached out to me and really cared about Billy. I mean, you know, he and I were friends since I was 15 years old. That spans about 55 years. So we've been together, and he's been the stable manager since the beginning when I started buying horses when we had two, and he was the stable manager, you know, when we brought two horses to the Derby, we had Vekoma. So, you know, it's a sad world without him. I mean, he was a great guy from New Orleans, you know, real Southern gentleman, anybody who met him. Billy always had a smile on his face. He always made everybody feel special when he talked to them. I think he was an extraordinary human being. Unfortunately, he had a long battle with cancer, and nobody really knew about it. He didn't want anybody to know about it. He was courageous through the whole time. And it's a less of a world without Billy Price, and especially in our industry. So, you know, I say goodbye to Billy, you know, with very big regrets, but I know that he lived the life that he wanted to, and his lifelong passion was to be involved in thoroughbred racing. He did a great job running the stable and was oftentimes seen with me and Keelan and Steve and George picking out horses. So it's as I say, just a great guy, great for the industry, and it's always sad to lose somebody like that. So I just want everybody to know how appreciative I was of Billy's efforts and how appreciative he was of the people that he came in contact with in this industry. And again, Steve, the outpouring that I've gotten from everywhere in our industry has been amazing to me.
Yeah, and you know, I just knew him to say hello, and you know, just in that rather entertaining circle of you and George and everybody that you know, the movable feast that's involved. How did you guys come together?
Billy and I met. It's a true story. I mean, it's kind of a fairy tale story. I cannot tell with my Aunt Margaret in Mountainside, New Jersey, which was kind of an upper-middle-class place, an upper-middle-class community. And I was coming out of the hood in Newark, New Jersey. And I kind of arrived with a motorcycle jacket and a BA haircut and peg pants and motorcycle boots. And I walked into a school where everybody's walking around with leather sweaters and brown and white loafers. And I was kind of the outcast. I was kind of the outcast. I mean, everybody was afraid of me. Nobody wanted to talk to me. So Billy happened to be at the same bus stop that it was at. He came over. The first time I got in the bus, I was like, I felt like, you know, if I had a seat, nobody sat next to me. I might as well got to the back of the bus. And so Billy came over and he said, well, get in the bus. I want you to sit next to me. And as it turned out, Billy was the high school football star. I mean, he scored 5 touchdowns in one day, and he had all the girls. His father worked for General Motors. He had a brand new 60 bodybuild convertible. He was kind of the dude, and he took me under his wing, and that's how we met. I never forgot that gesture from Billy. We stayed friends for his whole life.
Oh wow! You know, it's funny. I did see the piece the open in at the Blood Horse, and I saw that he took his, you know, his sports prowess to Curry College and in outside of Boston. And I had a very good friend I grew up with. I went to Watkinson with, and he went to Curry, and I smiled when I saw that, you know, that he had gone to Curry. That's a small liberal arts school.
Yeah. He was a great guy. I mean, he was actually, you know, down in the Mardi Gras, they have these social clubs. Yep. Every year they pick somebody to lead the parade and be king of Mardi Gras. Well, Billy was one year he was king of Mardi Gras, which was one of his lifetime dreams. In fact, I was on the float with him, and he was the king. So he had a great life. I mean, he accomplished what he wanted to do, and he spent his last years doing what he loved, which was, you know, he'd come up and stay with me and Steve, I have a home up at Saratoga for the season. He'd come up and we'd spend all that time together. We'd wake up every morning, go watch the horses work out, then go to racetrack. So we spent a lot of time together. Sometimes my wife would say, I think you spent more time with Billy than you did with me. He came every year for Thanksgiving and Christmas, you know, to my house. He knew my family. My son and he really got along. He loved my son. My son loved him. He was like the surrogate son to Billy. So it's a big loss. But you know, you got to look back and you remember the good times and you remember what a good guy was, and that kind of makes you feel good. You know, you get over the shock. Even though you know it's coming, it's still a shock because, you know, death is when they finally close the door. So it's sad, but I got a lot of good memories.
Tough. I suppose managing the the operation. People hear that term, a racing manager. You know, yesterday, Jerry McLennan joined us, Randy, and we talked about Saturday, and you were involved. Yes, I think Sunday too. I saw where Majestic Dunhill ran, but you know, Jerry was talking about his cousin Paul Pompa, and you know, Jerry did all the, you know, all the condition book work and interfacing with the, you know, with the trainers and, you know, that kind of thing. It's
a big job.
It's a big job, and people don't, you know, you think, oh, how hard can it be? Well, you'd be surprised.
I know, it's hard.
Yeah.
especially as many horses I have, it's a hard job. Oh, it's a full-time job. I mean, I think the only thing he said to me, you know, he said to me, if I have one regret, he said, I'm 100% sure Vekoma's going to get sprint champion. That's the only thing I wish I would have lived to see. That made me cry.
Yeah.
But as I say, he lived a good life. He enjoyed what he did. So you can't ask him what that. He had a long life. And so he was suffering a lot in the last few months. And believe me, he's better off where he is now than where he was for the last few months. So we say goodbye to him, but I say goodbye to him today with a smile on my face.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm glad we had the chance to have you visit. And along those lines, Randy, we haven't talked since the decision and the circumstances. Vekoma had been pointing for a Breeders' Cup, and then when he arrived at Keeneland, it became obvious that he was less than 100%, and kind of made the decision for everybody.
Steve, it was a shame. I mean, the horse had never been sick a day in his life. I mean, he had some leg injuries and those things, and all horses, but he never been sick. And to get a fever 3 days before the Breeders' Cup, when you're going to be 3 to 5, and I guess George and I, what we said to each other, we said, what we really wanted was for him to be able to show the world what kind of horse he was. Because, as you know, he was an extraordinary horse. Mm. I mean, I think he's going to be a good stallion. I think the Met Mile was one of the best races I ever saw. And so the disappointment for me was for the horse. I mean, of course I was disappointed. I want to win a Breeders' Cup, like any owner. But George, Cindy, and I were more sad for Vekoma when he won. But he's at a great place. We brought him up and said goodbye to him. And, this may sound like a fairy tale, but they were walking him into the barn that he goes in, where he stays for 30 days, and he stopped, and he took turned his head, he looked over us like to say goodbye. Cindy broke down. George and I were close to breaking down. But look, you're blessed as an owner to have one horse like that in your whole life. I mean, I look back and I say, what a ride he took me on. So I mean, he's as you know, he was an extraordinary horse.
Well, and you got plenty that could yet, you got plenty of time yourself to look forward to, another horse of a lifetime. And we should check in on this front. A couple of questions, actually, because this came up, it just came up minutes ago with Aaron Crady. How much support and how much breeding will you do with Vekoma in terms of some mares of your own? I know I've talked to you about the ups and downs of the breeding side.
Well, you look at it differently when you've got the shares. I've got a share in Constitution, which I bought, which has turned out to be great, and I've got one of my mares in full to him. And but I've got three mares. As you know, Mr. Hughes doesn't sell shares. I mean, he keeps the whole horse. And so, but he gives. I received three, and Mike Gaddis, my partner, received three, and George received one. So I'm going to breed. I mean, I'm in the process of talking to a number of people. I'm not shorting any callers asking me about if I want to breed. And Mike and I are talking about buying a couple of mares. So I'm going to campaign for Vekoma as much as I can. I know Mike is. I truly believe that my belief in a stallion is. An important part of being a stallion is how much heart you have. And, I never had a horse that had more heart than Vekoma, who was more determined to win than him. And I think if he can pass that on, I think he's going to be a very successful stallion. So we're going to find out. But to answer your question, Mike and I are both going to campaign him either by mares or full share with some people.
Very nice. Very nice. And so we can look forward to some some Hill Gatsis runners from Vekoma in a few years. A couple of other notes. I mentioned Majestic Dunhill the other day in the fall high weight. I'm curious about that nice filly from the summer and the three-year-old Up in Smoke.
Okay. Two things. The Majestic Dunhill, 6 furlongs, bad start, throw out. George is probably going to run him in the Cigar Mile. I mean, that's probably what we're going to do. And then the General George down in Laurel. We think a lot of this horse. I mean, you know, he ran 100 by list. I mean, you know his history. He's had a lot of hard luck losses. But I like the horse. That's the plan right now. Whether George is going to stay with the Cigar Mile, I don't know. But he's definitely going to General George. Up in Smoke, should be back in training. I think George got her last week. We think the world of that horse. I mean, she just got a couple of hiccups, and we had to put her up. But she'll be back, and she'll be back. She'll be back strong. You know, also, you talk about horses of a lifetime. I mean, Channel Maker's developing my second horse of a lifetime. I mean, the horse wins two back-to-back grade ones, won a 108, then once loses to the two best turf horses in the world and runs another 108. So I think, you know, he's been a revelation to us and a great horse to have. So, and we got a couple of horses that I don't think I can tell you right now that I got a two-year-old that I think is going to be in the Kentucky Derby next year, but I got some two-year-olds that I think are going to be stakes horses. So, and you know, I'll probably buy something two-year-old in training. We'll see. George does a lot of magic with my horses.
Let me ask about one just from the weekend too. We shouldn't overlook that nice New York bred Palace Malice filly. What was she, second or third the other day, right, in the Comley?
She was second, I think. Yeah,
second. There
and,
you go.
And also, Funny Guy. You can't forget about Funny Guy. I mean, either.
Yeah. Yeah. Ice Princess is who we're talking about, by the way. New York bred.
Yeah.
That
Ice Princess. She ran second. She ran a 93, and you know you saw the race. I mean, the guy had lone speed. I don't know if it would beat that horse, but she ran a 93. She's a pretty nice horse.
No doubt. Exactly, and you know, we talked yesterday. This was the race Mrs. Danvers wired, and Jose Lascano just outsmarted everybody.
Definitely. I mean, you know, when you looked at that race, you thought there was going to be so much speed in the front. You didn't think that horse was going to go. That horse went. Nobody went with him, and that was the end of the story.
That's one of the great mysteries. And Andy Serling's on at 11. If I bring that up, you know, Andy, that Andy will run with that like a Marlin. I mean, that's his favorite. That's his favorite annoyance in the game.
Well, it's true. I mean, as a handicapper and owner or a jockey, as a handicapper race. And I said to Gargan, I said, listen, this race is going to set up for us. This horse was trained as well as she ever trained. I said, look, we're going to get some speed up front. We got a good chance to go by him at the end. I mean, she was coming at the end, but it was way too late.
Yeah.
That horse, they let that horse get away. I mean, like you say, that's horse racing. You look at the race, you think there's going to be a huge speed duel, and that horse is going to sit off it with me, and we're going to see what happens. It's the opposite. You never know.
They open the gates and they look at each other and you know
it's, and then you always have to say, I'm not going to get that speed to a point. There is none. You're left behind. Well, that's you know, as you know, the ups and downs of this game are there's a lot more downs, but the ups certainly make up for any of the downs. I mean, you could win a $25,000 claim. I'm crazy. I can win a $25,000 claim. I'm shooting my head off.
Were you involved with either of the Reeves horses over the weekend?
No. Dean and I are great partners. We're partners with a lot of horses. Those two, we happen not to be partners. There's probably 10 or 12 horses between us that we are probably – he's not a partner, I'm not a partner. I was involved with either one of those. But he's a partner with me and Channel Maker.
Right. You got Gary Barber and it's
– You got Gary Barber and you got Waddell. You talk about getting excited when Channel Maker had the lead coming down the stretch and at the Breeders' Cup, you probably could have heard me from New York.
You're right. Great.
I won the stakes on day one at 75-1 with Ever Dangerous, And I handicapped the race. I couldn't convince anybody in the box with me to make that bet. I said, you guys are crazy. This horse has got to improve a smidgen. George, you're telling me the horse is training like he's never trained. Bet $10. Nobody bet a penny. 75-1. The longest shot I ever won with and ever cashed with.
That's great. It's funny because we talked about it when we came back from Breeders' Cup, and he literally was a horse that was on the other, the next page that, when ended up drawing in, and you just, when you look back, on the sheets, for instance, on Thoroughgraph, it was absolutely competitive. I mean, it was obvious. Unbelievable.
Exactly right. And George called me up and said, I had no angle in the draw. We were like 14. And George called up and said, we drew in. I said, you're kidding me. I said, let me get dressed and come to the races.
Unbelievable.
that's the game, I wouldn't do anything else. So, like I always say, some people play golf, some people go fishing. Some people, I don't want to catch a marlin, and I don't want to get a hole in one. I want to win a grade one. That's what I
want to
do.
Nice. Randy, it's always a treat, and so sorry about Billy.
And thank you so much. You're always a gentleman, Steve, and the chance for you to give me to express my appreciation for my good friend, on the air like this is, that means an awful lot to me and how much I appreciate you doing that for me. So thanks very much, and let's talk again. I'll give you a call, and George and I are going to do a whole evaluation of all the horses. And if I got something to talk about, I'll give you a call. We can talk about a few of them.
Outstanding. It's always a treat. And I'm looking forward toward the end of the year. Merry Christmas and happy, healthy. And I'm sure we'll see you somewhere down, in a warmer climb over the winter.
Yeah, I'm actually in Florida right now. I came down just a few days to get away from New York, and I got a horse in tomorrow at 20-1. I can't wait to go to the races.
There you go. You're going to fire early at Gulfstream. What are you in? Let me see. I'm just pulling out the paper. What do you got?
The horse is at King of Rock. I think it's 15-1 in the 10th race.
King of Rock, 15-1. Victor Lebrun with Michelle Nihe.
Yeah, he won last time. All right, Steve. Listen, you got. I know you're busy again. Thanks so much. You're always a gentleman.
My pleasure.
I appreciate the chance to give my thoughts about Billy Price. Thanks very much, and I'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
You got it, Randy Hill, everybody, and the familiar pink jacket, Randy RAH on the front and back. I wish I knew Billy better. I see him and say hi, but can't miss a chance to let Randy pay tribute. And it is a big job. You got to keep track of those horses and where they're headed. And, it's 60 horses he's got in training, Randy. he's gung-ho and a lot of fun. One of the great owners in the game. Let's take a break. Top of the hours here, and we'll take one of two breaks. Got a busy morning coming ahead this hour. Bobby Newman next. Bobby to pay tribute to Calder and talk about, calling races, his career there and what Calder meant to him. Favorite moments, favorite horses, favorite races, favorite people. Bobby Newman next, Jay Pridman as well in this hour. Do a Del Mar season wrap-up with Jay. Andy Serling, hour three. Back after this, Bobby Newman joins us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
The exciting Southern California Thoroughbred Daytime Racing Circuit returns to Los Alamitos Racecourse with opening day of the LA County Fair meet set for Friday, December 4th. The meet will feature five exciting stakes races, headed by the Starlet on Saturday, December 5th, and the Los Alamitos Futurity on Saturday, December 19th. Recent winners of the Los Alamitos Futurity include the outstanding multiple stakes winners Improbable and Thousand Words. On weekdays, our first post will be at 1 p.m., while weekends will feature a 12:30 p.m. first post time. Plus, our wagering menu includes a pair of $1 pick fours, a traditional $2 pick six, and the popular 14% players pick five. Watch and wager on all of the great racing action on TVG, plus all other major ADW providers and at open satellite locations. And as we continue to follow our local guidelines, we'd like to thank all the great racing fans across the nation for their continued support of the Los Alamitos Racecourse. Opening day, Friday, December 4th. Watch and wager on exciting Southern California thoroughbred racing. For more, visit losalamitos.com.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.